Thank you, ladies. Tape room, there's a little touch on this somehow. Anyway, some of the special music you'll be hearing today, of course, has to do a lot with the resurrection. Normally, or maybe not normally, quite often in Sunday school, I would be maybe teaching on the resurrection, but I'll probably preach on it this morning, so I'm going to stay right in Daniel chapter 9. And it's not far off the point of where we're at. We have to review a little bit for you folks that are faithful every week. Somebody may be visiting. I have to review a little bit to kind of get the setting for them to kind of catch up with us a little bit. So I appreciate your patience on allowing me to do that. I remember one time my pastor was preaching through the book of Revelation many, many years ago, somewhere around right after Noah got off the ark, but it was a long time ago. And the outline of the book of Revelation is found in chapter 1, verse 19. Don't go there. I'm not going to go on it this morning. But he'd repeat that every week, 22 chapters in the book of Revelation, and it'd take about two Sundays to get through a chapter. So about 44 times he preached that, and he'd use that, and that's good. I mean, that was the outline given right in chapter 1. That's the whole outline of the book of Revelation. If you want to know how to view the book of Revelation, you go to chapter 1, verse 19. But anyway, I met a lady that visited the church several times, and she said, I can tell you one thing about Revelation. I know the outline of it. And I thought, well, that's not bad. She was kind of joking about it because he used it so much. But that's the way we learn, isn't it? Didn't we do that in class, you know, over and over? They tell me, I didn't know that at the time, but they tell me that our brain is a lot like one of the old-fashioned records that you had to cut a groove in. And the more you repeat it, the deeper the groove. Some of my grooves have kind of gotten clouded over. Did you ever hear anybody in school would say, well, he's pretty groovy? Did you ever hear that? Yeah, that was an old saying that some guy's kind of smart, you know. Anyway, I had to repeat a little bit here in chapter 9, so let's jump into it this morning. I'll start again in verse 21. Remind you, Daniel has finished his prayer. He's praying because in the captivity, the Jews in captivity to Babylon, he's been studying his Bible. He's been studying the book of Jeremiah and probably some Old Testament like Leviticus. And he has come up to the conclusion that their stay in Babylon, their captivity is about over. It's probably about the 68th year. Daniel's probably in his 90s by this time. He was one of the young men, teenagers probably, taken in captivity when Nebuchadnezzar came in. The Babylonians took the Jews into captivity. But in studying his Bible, he realizes that God had a predetermined time set, and that time was to be 70 years. He realizes it's getting very close for time for us to go home. He's found this, as it were, promise from God that the captivity would only be 70 years. And I've told you so many times, that's because God was taking his Sabbaths back that the Jews had stolen. For 490 years, they'd stolen the Sabbaths, and you divide 7 into 490, you got the 70 years where God collected the rent all at one time, so to speak. And Daniel had figured that out, and Jeremiah had said so. And by the way, he could study Jeremiah just like you and I can. He had the scrolls, he had the writings of the prophet Jeremiah. So he's praying, and he's asking God forgiveness for his nation, forgiveness for himself and all that have become unfaithful or went into idol worship or something else with the Lord. We ought to pray for our nation. It's in a mess. And I don't have a lot of hope, humanly speaking. My hope's in the Lord. Sometimes I'm here in the auditorium doing a little praying on my own, and I'll look over at the flag sometime, and I'll say, Lord, I don't know the answer, but you're the only answer. And as I think about our nation, I say a lot of hard things against the evil in our nation, and sometimes I run off somebody because they have a attitude toward me for pointing out the bad. There's a lot of Pollyanna Christians. How many of you know what I mean by that? They see nothing but the good. I come up behind a car with a bumper sticker. Used to be more, it's pretty hard now to find one. Used to have bumper stickers on them. It would say something like this: look for the good and praise it. Well, that's good, but how about looking for the bad and contending against it too? Brother, there's two sides to the street, and it's not all good. There's so much of it that's all bad. And so Daniel was praying about the bad of his nation, Israel. He was asking God to forgive the nation. He was praying a national prayer as well as personal, and he took blame for whatever part would have been his. Now, you don't find much written against Daniel. You got to look hard to find any sin in Daniel's life, just like you have Joseph in the Old Testament. And yet they were not perfect. Only Jesus was. And you find other men that did a great job for the Lord, and yet sometimes they messed up. David messed up, and Moses messed up. Moses lost his temper. How many of you know why Moses lost his temper? Because the people were murmuring. And he kind of lost his temper with them, and he was told to smite the rock one time and speak to it the second time. He smote it twice, remember? Because he lost his temper. He was breaking the type. Christ was that rock was a type of Christ. Christ was once crucified for us. After that, we speak to him. He's not going to be crucified anymore. And the folks that want to get lost and get saved again, get lost and get saved again, the book of Hebrews tells you he died in sin once. He's not coming back and do it again. You need to understand that. Thank God we are. Our rest is in him, that we can speak to him now. All right, back to Daniel here, though. He's praying. The angel Gabriel is sent to him, flying swiftly here in verse 21, gives him the answer. And the answer will go down to verse 23. At the beginning of our supplication, the prayer, the commandment came forth, and I am come to show thee, for thou art greatly beloved. Boy, that's wonderful. Have an angel from heaven tell you that. That you're beloved of God. This book tells you that you are, and it's no stronger if an angel could come tell you. Therefore, understand the matter and consider the vision. So here's his answer. He's giving him the answer to the question now. And here's the vision. 70 weeks are determined upon thy people. God always emphasizes this. Thy people, that's the Jewish nation, that's the Jewish people. And the holy city, that's Jerusalem. So he's telling Daniel how it's going to all turn out. He's giving him a timetable that is still one of the greatest portions in the Bible today when prophecy is considered on this particular timetable. And here it is. It's given to the Jews. And by the way, somebody has accurately said that the Jews are God's time clock, and they are. That means today, as we listen to what's going on in the news and our apparent and easy to see betrayal of Israel, is a very dangerous thing. Bible says Israel is the apple of God's eye. They are in disobedience, they are in unbelief. God is yet to deal with them on that, but it's still a dangerous thing. If you don't believe so, call up Hitler and ask him. And some others that took their stand against the Jews, what happened to them, amen? But anyway, here comes the vision. And six things here in chapter 9, verse 24, that is going to happen. We talked to you about that. And so, to finish the transgression, to make an end of sins, to make reconciliation for iniquity, and to bring in everlasting righteousness, to seal up the vision and prophecy, to anoint the most holy. Six things you can count up there. And it comes in order. And some of it has happened, and some of it is yet to be, but it will be. Now, as a starting place on this prophecy, we've studied that in verse 25. Know therefore and understand that from the going forth of the commandment to restore and build Jerusalem unto the Messiah the Prince shall be 7 weeks, 62 weeks. The street shall be built again, and the wall even in troublous times. Now what you have here, you have the 70 weeks of years. A week is 7 days, but in this case it is a week of years. A week of years would be 7 years. I've said it before. week of oranges would be seven oranges and so forth. So you got 490 years. That's the period of time that all through the Bible, God deals with the Jews on 490 year periods. That's why they were in Babylon 70 years. They had violated God's commands, and that determined the time. Now here in Jerusalem, it's broken down. The walls are broken down. The people are in captivity. I went to the book of Nehemiah with you last week, chapter 1 and 2, where Nehemiah, also a captive under the Persians and the Artaxerxes, was the king. And Nehemiah had gotten word of how bad Jerusalem was, the city and the walls broken down, and he let it get a hold of his countenance. Have you ever seen anybody that, you know, I hear folks talk about a poker face. I've seen somebody that better not play poker. Because everyone better not anyway, but their face would tell everything. You ever seen somebody like that? Their face would tell everything. My son Stephen had a problem with that growing up. I remember one particular basketball game. He was a good ball player, doing a good job, and there's never been a ball player that didn't have some concern about some of the refs' calls. That's why they don't believe referees will be in heaven. But anyway, joking around a little bit. Anyway, he kept every now and then getting called for a foul, getting penalized. And I told him, I said, son, it's not only the foul you committed, it's the man who's reading your face. I said, you got to learn to control that. No matter how mad you get, I said, you got to learn how to smile. Even when you know you were unjustly called, you got to learn how to smile. So the very next game, I was sitting down in our gym's pretty close to the ball floor anyway, and I was sitting there, and he got a bad call on him, and he smiled and smiled, and the referee called another foul on him. And the coach said, What'd he do? He said, I see his face. He's mocking me. He's smiling at me. He got the second call. Daddy's advice didn't pan out too good. Nehemiah came before King Xerxes with his feelings on his face. And the king got concerned. He said, why all this sad countenance? You know, you're not sick. It must be sadness of heart. That was a scary thing. The king could suspect you because Nehemiah was the cupbearer. He had to taste the wine before the king did, so make sure nobody had poisoned it. So the king, to see one of his servants that close to him looking unhappy, yeah, it was suspicious. So Nehemiah had to pray under his breath, step up to the king, and tell him what the trouble was. And the trouble was his beloved city needed help. The walls broke down and so forth. And so he asked, big request of the king, that he could go back and rebuild it. So that's what the whole book of Nehemiah is about there. You got the book of Ezra and the book of Nehemiah having to do with rebuilding the city and the walls. So we're back to Daniel now, chapter 9. Here's the starting point that the angel says, from the time of the commandment to restore and build Jerusalem. So you get a starting place. Unto Messiah the Prince. Now that Jesus is the Messiah. He is the prince. Messiah the prince shall be 7 weeks, 62 weeks. That's 69 weeks. And the street shall be built again, and the wall, even in troublesome times. Now, if you want to read Nehemiah and Ezra, you find out that was the case. Was rebuilt, but troublesome times. They had to keep a weapon in one hand and a tool in the other, work and guard at the same time. It's getting that way right now in serving the Lord. Today, the church is really a target now. I won't get off in it right now, but really has become a target. But they had to do the job in troublesome times. Now, this is predicted, and that's exactly what happened. Then in verse 26, after 62 weeks shall Messiah be cut off, but not for himself. Jesus didn't die for his own sins. He was not cut off for himself, but for you and I, as he took our place and paid our price. And the people of the prince that shall come. Now, get this in order. And the people of the prince, don't stop there. The prince that shall come, that identifies him. Now the people of the prince that shall come, he hadn't come yet, shall means yet, future. So keeping that in mind, we begin to learn something here about a man that we call in the New Testament and we talk about quite a bit as the Antichrist. Paul calls him the man of sin. He's got several names in the scripture. Book of Daniel identifies his attributes or faults or identification marks probably better than any other book in the Bible. We've studied it before, so I won't turn to it. But you have where Daniel describes him as a man that'll bring in a socialistic program. Socialism will be his government. You also find in Revelation chapter 6, he's the rider on the first white horse that shows up. And he comes in speaking peace. And he comes to power. You and I know it will be fairly temporary. First 3.5 years of the tribulation period. And in the last 3.5, God's going to fight with him and bring judgment on him and wrath on him. But the prince here that is mentioned, the first prince is the Messiah. The second one, down in verse 26, of the prince that shall come. Now, who was the people that destroyed the city and the sanctuary in verse 26? It was the Romans. Rome was in power when Jesus was born, remember? And in AD 70, following the crucifixion and the resurrection of Christ, about 30-something years, 40 at the most, the Roman Emperor Titus comes in and destroys the Jewish temple in their time of rebellion against Rome. I told you before that Christ was the lamb that was predicted. It's interesting this year that Passover with the Jews falls at the same time as what is called the Christian Easter. It's an interesting year because a lot of their big days of the Jews, the festivals of the Jews were called feast, and they did have the food and so forth, some fasting, some eating times. But if you look it up in the Hebrew, and if you understood Hebrew, those feast days were called appointed times. That's what we would say in English. They were appointed times, times that God had said that he would meet with them. Now, it's an interesting year we're living in. Somebody asked me this morning, did I see the blood moon the other night? I think you could see it on TV as NASA pictured it. I didn't. I kind of wish I had, but I knew it was coming, but I got busy and did not. But with all that said, it's an interesting year this year, and September's becoming a year that a lot of prophecy preachers, month that a lot of prophecy preachers are talking about. Don't get me wrong, we can't set a time on the Lord's return for the saved, but it could be any minute, it could be a few years, we don't know. He's still the blessed hope that he will come soon, amen? With all that said, we're talking about the prince in verse 26 that shall come. He'll destroy the city and the sanctuary when he comes, and the end thereof will be with a flood unto the end of the war, desolations are determined. Now, you can get all kind of prophecy books today, all kind of preachers. Some of them are more right than others. Some of them are pretty wrong. Some of them are very much with the Bible, I believe. But it is exciting times. But listen, we're not supposed to be really looking for the Antichrist. We're looking for the Lord Jesus Christ. And he's gonna take care of the Antichrist in his time. But we can't help but be intrigued a little bit as we look around on the scene today. And this week's been a big one with the so-called nuclear talks. Better word might be nuclear surrender. Right. But anyway, interesting times. And preachers and others have speculated for a long time about the Antichrist. Antichrist spirit is spoken of by John. I don't know why this throat does this to me when I get to teaching. When I holler at my wife, it comes out clear. I get in church and holler at you, and it clouds up. Don't ask her about that. Anyway, some things this Antichrist is going to do is listed in verse 27. And he, draw your line from he back to prince in those two verses. And he shall confirm the covenant with many for 1 week. That's a week of years, 7 years. And in the midst of the week, 3.5 mark, he shall cause the sacrifice and the oblation to cease. And for the overspreading of abominations, he shall make it desolate, even unto the consummation, and that determined shall be poured upon the desolate. I've read it all before. I'll talk now through some of these last couple of verses here. Notice here, he's going to stop the sacrifice and the oblation. That's Jewish offerings. And he's going to desecrate the temple. We read in other places where he's going to set up an image in the temple. Many believe it'll be an image of himself. Now, you can go back through history and find out where other rulers, Roman ruler did it once, Syrian ruler did it before that by the name of Antiochus Epiphanes. He's the one that offered the sow, the hog, on the altar to desecrate it. It's yet going to happen in the future. So how you know that wasn't the time? Because Jesus said, way 500 years after Daniel wrote, Jesus quoted him in Matthew 24, and he said, the abomination of desolation spoken of by Daniel the prophet. So we know there is a future time when this future so-called prince, we know as the Antichrist, will desecrate and set an abomination up in the temple. Now the temple's got to be rebuilt. It's not rebuilt now. The space is there. The Mosque of Omar, the Golden Dome is there. And they think they've built it over the Holy of Holies, and very likely they haven't. But anyway, I believe the Antichrist, when he comes on the scene, as we read right here, he'll confirm the covenant. Didn't say he'd make one. Do y'all know a covenant's already been made? It was made as far back as when Jimmy Carter was president. Bill Clinton, as president, tried to get Arafat and the Jew, Begin, I guess it was, to shake hands, and he finally forced them to, trying to confirm the covenant, but it didn't work. Arafat, who's dead now, heading up the Arabic side, told Clinton, he said, you're trying to get me killed. If I made peace with the Jews, my own people would kill me, is what he was saying. And they would have. They killed the Egyptian leader, Anwar Sadat, I believe was his name, killed him. So there you go. Anyway, this fellow here is going to confirm the covenant. And for a week, that week of 7 years, in the midst of the week, he's going to break it. Now, you can read about it in Revelation chapter 13 and some other places, and I don't want to recover a lot of stuff that we've talked about there. We know the premillennial, pre-trib rapture could come for the church any time, and the seven-year period of Jacob's trouble would start. The Antichrist will put in an appearance. He'll make a covenant with Israel. They'll buy into it for a little bit. They're so hungry for protection and peace. And then he'll double cross them in the middle of the week. That's what the Bible teaches. That's what Jesus was referring to in Matthew 24 when he said the abomination of desolation. Now, who's Antichrist? I don't know. A lot of times we get to watching people in the news, people in the governments, and there's been all kind of speculation by preachers and others. And we can't help but look at some of the signs and identifying marks of the Antichrist and see them sometime on characters that we know about. When Hitler was getting going and during World War II, a lot of good Baptist preachers thought he was the Antichrist because he fulfilled so much, especially his killing of the Jews. I don't fault any of them for thinking he was. He was definitely a forerunner. He was a type, no doubt about that, but he wasn't the final one. They say that Nostradamus, the so-called prophet that the colleges love to quote, who didn't get much right except he got it out of the Bible, by the way, but Nostradamus said there'd be three Antichrists, and he did name, they think, Hitler as one of them. And the third one, whatever, hasn't come yet, according to him. I wouldn't pay much attention to that. But preachers do that. There's those that thought Jimmy Carter would be the Antichrist. I never did think so. I think the Antichrist is going to be a very slick, smart guy. So I never thought it would be Jimmy Carter. Bill Clinton come along, and a lot of them thought it was him. And I saw some characteristics, but there's a verse or two that eliminated him. One of them in Daniel says he'd have no desire of women, and so that eliminated Bill. Help yourself. You're in a place where we just give you the truth, whether you like it or not. And it does say that in the book of Daniel. He doesn't regard the desire of women. Talking about the Antichrist. Of course, Obama now is the latest candidate. And boy, he's given a lot of signals that a lot of fellows are seeing. And I don't fault anybody. I got an article here by Dan Goodwin. He's a good prophecy preacher, far as I know. Don't know him personally, but it's in a magazine here. And he makes a point or two that you might be interested in. And don't get me wrong, I'm not saying Obama's the Antichrist. I don't know who the Antichrist is. But he talks about how that Jesus came in on Palm Sunday, and that was last Sunday. And he talks about how the Antichrist might have that. And he says here, he's not saying that the president is the Antichrist, but he's showing some coincidences here, and I'm reading it right here. He visited Israel on March the 20th after he got elected. He went on Nisan 9, that's the Jewish calendar month. He says, remember that day starts at 6 p.m. in Israel. Nisan 10 is Palm Sunday, begin just a few hours after the arrival of Air Force One. Most of the president's diplomacy took place on Palm Sunday, the 10th of Nisan. Nisan, how you say it. The president arrived in Israel supported by the Democratic Party, which has a donkey as its symbol. That symbol's becoming more realistic all the time with me. More fitting. Jesus was praised when he presented himself to Israel. The president received honor and praise upon his arrival. There was even an ice, sculpture, an image of the president made in his honor. Check that out in Revelation 13. Image of the beast. Jesus entered Jerusalem as the Prince of Peace. The president entered as a bearer of what's called an unshakable alliance. Peace. After the rapture, the Antichrist will make a 7-year peace treaty with Israel. Talked about that. There was some confusion about the Lord's place of birth, just as there is great controversy about President Obama's place of birth. You see, the prophecies in the Old Testament said Messiah would be from Bethlehem of Judea, and that is Micah 5:2. We'll talk about that at Christmas. But you also got to remember that there was a little controversy. Even though he was born in Bethlehem, he was spoken of as coming out of Nazareth. You remember what Nathan Philip findeth Nathan, saying unto him, we found the Messiah that Moses talked about. And Nathan says, can any good thing come out of Nazareth? Remember reading that? So there was a little debate among even the believers on Jesus after he was grown up. Anyway, a lot of unanswered questions here. You do have to wonder, and I'm reading him again, how come he spent millions to seal his records? He even is a mystery man. His college records are a mystery. His Hawaiian birth records are a mystery. His whole life is a mystery. It is almost like he has no past at all. There has never been a friend, a classmate, or even an old girlfriend that has come forward to say they knew Mr. Obama from his college days. That's interesting, isn't it? Yes, sir. Where'd he come from? No record. And I read what somebody else said, so if you get mad at him first, and then I'll take what's left over. But truth of the matter is, we don't know who the Antichrist was, but we do have some identifying marks in the Bible, and it's So if you spot a man today that is fitting all those marks, the good part of it is, for you and I, they're saved. Jesus is coming soon. Because the Antichrist is not going to be able to attempt to set up his kingdom until after Christ has taken his bride out, those that are saved. So I'm going to quit on chapter 9, even though I didn't finish it that well. But it is a very tremendous chapter. And those last verses having to do with the time set by God to finish the course with Israel. And that last 7 years, week of 7 years, has not started yet. Jeremiah 30 says it'll be the day of Jacob's trouble. It'll be a time that Jesus spoke of before he was crucified. He said, I've come in my Father's name, and you receive me not. Another will come in his own name, and him ye shall receive. Prediction of Israel.